Hello there, and a very warm welcome. This is YM from West Midlands Police. It's our brand new policing podcast. Now, my name is Jarlath Eaton, and I work in the Corporate Communication Department, and we thought you might like to get a bit of an insight into the work that we do at keeping the West Midlands region safe. This is our first podcast attempt in a number of years, and we do hope you're going to like what you're about to hear over the next half hour. If you do, if you don't, if you want to give us some constructive criticism, any messages about this podcast at all, then find us on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. Just search West Midlands Police on any one of those platforms and drop us a message on there. We'd love to hear your views and try and give you the best podcast that we can and try and give you that added insight, as we say, at trying to keep the West Midlands region safe. So in this pilot episode, we're going to be looking at some of our big Christmas safety operations. Later on in the show, you will hear from our road harm reduction team about the dangers of drink driving this festive season. First, though, we're going to go into Birmingham City Centre and give you an exclusive look at how we police the Frankfurt Christmas Market.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Adam, and we're both from West Midlands Police, and we're here with Superintendent Jack Adler at the Birmingham Christmas Market. What do you do, Jack? What's your role?
So within the Intelligence Department, I'm part of the senior leadership team there, and my day job is to use intelligence to drive the business of West Midlands Police and then to identify the risks that might affect us over coming days, over coming weeks, and make sure our resources are deployed appropriately for that.
Brilliant. But that's not just your job, is it? So you've been working on something else for a long time now, and just tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so in addition to my day job, I'm also what's known as a College of Policing qualified and accredited Silver Policing Commander. So that's where I will take responsibility for planning and coordination of public order events and public events within the city.
Right. And one of those is the German or Frankfurt Christmas Market in Birmingham. So you've been planning for a long time for this event. So just trying to tell us a bit about that one.
Yeah, this is the second year now that I've been responsible for policing at the German Market. It's an unusual event because it's a private organiser working with the local authority in a public place to host an event for the public. So it's a bit complicated in the way that we have to manage our relationships, and the police have got very different roles to the event organisers in these circumstances.
So if I was a visitor to the Christmas Market then, like, what would I see? What can I expect to see from West Midlands Police my visit to the Frankfurt Christmas Market this year?
The first thing you see is very subtle policing. We have a team of dedicated officers that are here all the time the markets are open. Sometimes they're in uniform, sometimes they're in plain clothes. But what we want to try and do is actually blend in and just create that feel that it's the same as any neighbourhood. Although it is a big public event, it's a family event, it's really safe. We don't have any significant sort of policing issues. So we're here to engage with people, to have a laugh with people, to have photographs taken with people, and just show the human side of policing. As I say, there are uniformed officers, there are plain clothes officers out to check that people are behaving in the way we'd expect. We also will have firearms officers here. You'll see them, they're just normal police officers who carry an extra piece of equipment with them. Please approach them, please go and say hello to them. They are very friendly, and I think the key really is not to be afraid of them.
Have we had any good examples this year of police work, those plainclothes officers that have been on patrol, any good arrests?
Yeah, we have had an incident 2 weeks ago now where a member of the public saw two people who they thought were acting a bit suspiciously. They said, told a uniformed police officer what they'd seen, who passed that on to a plainclothes officer who observed those people for a while. They agreed that they were acting suspiciously, so stopped them under our stop and search powers. When they were searched, they were found to be in possession of a mobile phone that didn't belong to them, and it transpired that it had been stolen earlier in another part of the city. So it worked really well having uniformed officers there that the public can go and speak to, and having the plainclothes officers that can then act on that information.
And what advice would you give to people that come to markets? So you see all the time people will grab their hot dog, grab their beer, put their phone on the table, and then turn to talk to their friend. Is that quite frustrating? Because obviously that's the main focus of theft, thieves.
It is. Phones are really expensive, and they are a desirable commodity that people want. When people come to the market, they want to be able to relax, they want to be able to have a laugh with their friends and family, and absolutely we don't ever want to try and stop that or make people nervous. So it's just that general advice, just be really aware of where your purse is, where your phone is your bag zipped up, are your pockets zipped up, put your hand on it, and look out for your friends who's around you. Just be a little bit vigilant, just keep an eye on things.
Are there any risks coming to the German Market? Like anything? Like, you always get the same sort of messaging every year, people saying, I'm not going to go there, it's crowded, there's always something going on. Is that sort of a misconception? attraction?
It is. It's very busy, and certainly on our peak weekends, we work with event organisers to make sure that it is a safe. The event organisers are really good this year. They're putting one-way systems in to try and prevent the crushing and ease the flow of the public coming through. So we do work with them around that sort of crowd dynamics. But generally, from a safety perspective, it is a really safe place to be. We have 5.5 million visitors come to the markets from all over the country every year. Only a very, very small minority don't have a great time. So our advice is please come and make the most of this brilliant event.
Just tell us about the relationship you've got with the stallholders. So obviously they come from over from Europe. Is it quite hard to communicate with them, the language barrier? What have you done to kind of put in place that you have with them?
Our relationship with the stallholders and the event organisers is really interesting. And as you say, they come from predominantly from Germany, but also from Romania and Poland. A lot of them don't speak English as a first language, so it is quite difficult to communicate sometimes. Some of the people haven't necessarily had the best relationships with police back at home, so they don't quite understand how we police here in the UK and the friendly style that we try and approach. So we started off with a briefing to all the stallholders the night before the German market opened, where we introduce ourselves, we explain what policing is like in the UK, the way we're trying to take that neighbourhood approach, and that we're all just normal people, that we open to conversations. And we repeated that briefing in German, in Poland, in Polish and in Romanian, to try and make sure that people understood what we're trying to do, and to provide that reassurance actually that we are here for them as much as we are the visitors. One of the things we're really looking at in West Midlands Police is the diversity of our staff. We have people from a whole range of different countries that speak a whole different range of languages, and we've really used that this year. So one of the examples that we've got, a PCSO who's normally based in Wolverhampton, who comes and works regularly on the market. She's from Romania. She's a fluent Romanian speaker. So she comes down in her own time to really engage with the stallholders and show that actually we are a real diverse city, and that as a police service we can provide all of those services we need. And this is where diversity for us is really, really important, because it just shows that we are there for everybody.
Would you encourage anyone who's got a language, knows another language, to join the police? Is that
Absolutely. Police recruitment is really strong at the moment. We need to recruit lots of officers over the next couple of years. We really want to broaden that diversity within the organisation. So any language, any skill that somebody's got from whatever culture and background they're from, please come into the organisation. And we use it in this way. As say, we've had the PCSO who speaks Romanian. We've got a special constable who speaks German and Dutch, and he's come down. So anything like that, those specialty skills are fantastic for what we need at the minute.
You mentioned that you had on duty a couple of weeks ago a student officer who had been at the German market last year, friends and family.
Yep.
This year he's 8 weeks in the job.
Yeah, it's a young guy, Will, who's only joined the police 8 weeks ago. This time last year he was in the German markets with his friends, drinking, socialising, as many people would be doing right now. He's since then applied and joined the police. So it was one of his first experiences out in uniform, out on foot patrol in the German markets. He did say it was a bit nerve-wracking for the first time, seeing his reflection in the mirror, realising that he's now a police officer, and people, they see the uniform, they see him in that position of responsibility. And I think he gained a huge amount from that, actually, the experience that I've been able to talk to people, been able to witness the vulnerability firsthand, and then that just showing the human side, just being around people in similar age to him. It was a really good experience for him.
I'm PC Gregory. I'm currently based at Tally Ho Training College, which is soon to go to Willenhall Station in Coventry on investigations. I'm a student police officer. I came from a background waiting on tables, very little experience in this sort of thing. But the training's been fantastic, the tutors have been brilliant, and I've had a fantastic time doing it. From making my first arrest to taking statements, it's all been wonderful, is the word I use to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, Superintendent Hadley's has mentioned you when we talked to him earlier on in the show. The fact that you were here last year having a few drinks with friends, and now you're policing the Frankfurt Christmas market, I mean, does it feel weird? Does it feel strange a little bit, the fact that 12 months on, it's sort of you looking at the other side now, do you think?
It is actually quite surreal. Sometimes you don't forget you're in that uniform, but you wonder why people are looking at me, and you realise it's because, oh, I'm wearing a fluorescent jacket and a foot-tall hat. It's fantastic. It is weird thinking that I was here with my friends last year, and now I'm the guy that's there protecting the public, fighting crime, making sure everyone's staying safe. certainly a strange experience when actually arresting someone for being drunk and disorderly, rather than standing by and watching in front of your mate saying, yeah, I've just seen someone get arrested. I'm now the guy doing that. It's a surreal experience.
You talk about that surreal experience. I mean, especially for your friends and family who you were obviously here with last year, like, does it feel weird for you policing what is the biggest Christmas market, German Christmas market, outside of Germany itself, and one of the biggest events that we do every single year?
Yeah, no, it is. It's one of those things you see on the news. It's the sort of thing that features in films, and you know, you see Bobby's knocking about on the news. If the German market's in the news for whatever, and then knowing that's you, that's what you do for a living, and yeah, that's your job. It is surreal. It's odd, especially when you do bump into people that you know. Yeah, no, it's a surreal experience.
What would you say to potential people who are looking at going through the student officer program themselves? And how would you give any words of encouragement? What would you say to people who are thinking about doing it? I guess jump in right in the deep end, I guess.
Yeah, just dive right in. Do it, absolutely. It doesn't matter your background. We've got guys and girls from everywhere. But yeah, absolutely do it. You know, you never know until you try. And if you don't try, you've already failed. It's a fantastic career. It's a career for life. It's brilliant. And it's a career where you are making a difference to the people around you, to societies around you, and to the city as a whole.
What's your favourite thing about the German markets? This is your second year, but what do you like seeing?
I think for me, my favourite bit is the overall atmosphere, the amount of people that are here, the mixture of people here, from the young to the old, particularly up at the top around by the Moose when the karaoke singer starts and everybody joins in. I just think it's a really friendly atmosphere. It just feels really safe. And there's nothing else like it in the city, and this is why it's unique this time of year. So my message is just come and enjoy the city for what it is. It's a fantastic place to live, to work, to socialise. So come down and enjoy it.
A really interesting look there, I think, at how we police the Frankfurt Christmas Market in Birmingham, which of course is celebrating its 20th year this year. And we do hope that you go and enjoy it, because it is a fantastic experience when you go into Birmingham and just have a look at how the whole main city centre gets turned into an unbelievable Christmas market. Many thanks to Hannah and to Adam for joining me to go and interview Superintendent Jack Hadley and Student PC Gregory. And as they mentioned just there, they weren't the only ones out on patrol in the Christmas market.
Okay, what's your name?
Hamera.
And what are you?
I'm a police cadet.
And what are you doing here today?
Today we've come to the German markets.
Okay, what are you actually doing here?
We're patrolling the markets with the police that are based here, and we're learning what they do.
Okay. What's one thing you've learned about today?
We've learned how the police deal with language barriers and cultural differences, and how they assign officers who speak the same languages so that they can interact with the stall holders properly.
Yes, that is one of our young police cadets there being interviewed by one of our cadet leaders, Asim. Now, cadets are between 13 and 17 years of age. And what we try to do is give them a unique insight into the force. Now, it's not a recruitment tool like it was back in the early 80s and the 90s, but what we try to do now with the cadet program is make it a way for young people to gain an opportunity to help others and develop life skills. Now, the key to the success of the scheme is our cadet leaders, definitely, like Asim. Now, actually, you can read an article about him right now on our website to find out more about what the job entails of being a cadet leader, and also what he does and how he combines it with his day job here in the force. And as long as you are of 18 years of age, you can actually apply to become a cadet leader yourself, even if you don't work for us already. It's a fantastic role, and one that you will get so much satisfaction out of, seeing how the young police cadets come through and develop their life skills. If you want to find out more, go to our website and search cadets. All you need to do to find our website, first of all, is search Westminster Police on any search engine. And then once you're at the website, once you're there on the website, search cadets, you'll get all the information you need. We'll also be looking to a further podcast special about the cadets and the cadet program later on next year. It's part of the many plans that we have for YM from West Midlands Police. But as we said, this is our debut episode, and we hope you're enjoying it so far. We're now going to move on to the second part of the show. Now, this is all about the dangers of drinking and driving, particularly here at Christmas. Now, we all know the risks, yet we still catch so many people doing this, particularly, as we say, over the festive period. Now, we asked our road harm reduction team to talk to us about it, and you might get a few of the funny excuses from people they've caught driving under the influence over the years. You'll hear from PC's Mark Hodson, Rich Lyman, Paul Styler, Dave Bickley, Paul Ennis and Abby James, and asking the questions for us is Sergeant John Butler.
So, starting with you, Mark, why do you think drink driving still happens?
Because some people haven't caught on to the fact that, firstly, it's socially unacceptable because the impact it has on their communities. Obviously, it accounts for a large number of people killed and seriously injured on the roads every day. And their selfish attitude has not yet borne fruit, if you like, but eventually it will. That's why we strive so hard to combat it.
Rich, anything you want to add to that?
Some of it is because it's going to be the lack of the fear of being caught. A lot of the times you go out, you have a couple of pints, and I only live 3 or 4 miles down the road. What's the worst that's going to happen between here and there? So it's sort of, I'll chance it tonight because I got away with it last week, maybe.
Paul?
When it's the thing that with drink driving that I seem to sort of concentrate on is the thought of the morning after when you think you've had a half an hour's sleep and that's resolved your problem and all the alcohol's gone out of your body. But we've seen that quite a high percentage of our morning after checks that we'd run. Quite a lot of drink drivers are caught at that time.
Okay, so I mean we're going to touch on that a bit later, but that's probably a good junction to bring that in. So, in terms of the morning after, then, do you just want to explain to those listening what the morning after theory is?
So when you go out at night and you've took the right decision not to drive and you've consumed your alcohol to whatever level that may be, you could be aware and rightly so you don't want to drive. Taxi home. When you go to sleep, the body still sort of deals with the alcohol in a similar manner as if you're awake. So there's a certain time period that runs through while the alcohol's removed from your system. So in the morning, when you get up and you might feel a bit groggy or you might feel fine, then jump in your car, off to work or to do your normal daily chores. It's at that point that your body could still have enough alcohol in your system to be over the limit.
Yeah, and so just to clarify on the morning after, a few points that I've got noted for that. So in terms of units, so it takes on average around 1 hour per unit of alcohol to pass through your body. However, that is dependent on a number of factors, such as your own body, your own body makeup, the metabolism that you have, how much food you've eaten, whether or not you've drunk tea or coffee. So one of the things that I want to point out, and we'll go into a bit more detail later, is the myth that drinking lots of tea and coffee sobers you up. Obviously, everyone in the room's aware that caffeinated drinks bring on the effects of alcohol. It concentrates it more in your blood. So I suppose the key there is, once you've had a night out, is to just get plenty of water in your system, which will help get those units out of your body. Dave, anything you want to bring in on that?
Well, following on from that, it's probably the biggest question that we get asked as police officers, isn't it? How many can I have and be safe to drive?
So obviously, we're aware by law there's a drink drive limit,
yeah,
which is 35 micrograms of alcohol in 100 millilitres breath. Now, that means something to all of us around the table, but for general members of the public, that's just a figure, means absolutely nothing.
Absolutely.
So, Dave, how many pints can I consume for that?
It, like you've already said, it affects everybody differently. It affects on factors. If you're feeling down in the weather, you know, you're not feeling well, or you haven't had anything to eat, or many other factors get affected. So it doesn't. You can't quantify it. You
yep.
cannot quantify how many drinks you can have.
Yeah.
Which again takes me back to, if you're driving, you don't have any.
Yeah. So, Paul, so obviously the message that we're putting across here is is not to drive at all if you've had even a single drink.
Yeah, which is a simple, straightforward message, isn't it? And I'd reiterate what's been said around the table already. I don't think if I asked anybody, there is anybody now that would say it's acceptable to drink and drive. But I think Rich made the point that people will think that they can take a chance on it. And I think people are maybe tempted to take a chance on it. But for me, the limit is zero. Don't do it. If you're going to drive, don't drink.
That's the selfish attitude of this sort of offender, though, isn't it? Because they're worried about the consequences to them, not to other people. So they'll take a chance because they think there's not much of a chance with their driving licence or their livelihood. But they don't really care about the consequences if it goes wrong and the person they could kill or seriously injure.
And I think the thing we've got to add to that is people talk about drink drive limits, but people have got to remember that they could be under the drink drive limit, but if their driving is bad, they can still be convicted for a drink drive offence. So that thing of, if you're going to have a drink, don't drive, is the message we need to be getting out there, because you're still at risk of being convicted, even under the drink drive limit.
And it's not just a conviction, is it? Because if the worst happened and somebody's killed, then somebody's got to have that burden with them, the weight of that bad decision with them for the rest of their life.
So let's quickly go around the room then. So let's talk about the weirdest things that we've come across or been asked around myths for drink driving. So for me personally, so I stopped someone who was over the limit, who told me they couldn't be over the limit because they'd just eaten a kebab with hot sauce on it, and it must have been the hot sauce that had caused the reading. There is no alcohol content in hot sauce, certainly not in any kebab shop I know of. So that is not something that's going to get you out of drink driving. Mark?
I'm going to be terribly sensitive about this. And the weirdest thing for me is the people who really don't think they're going to be caught, because everybody thinks it has to be a police officer that's going to see you or catch you. But all the things that give away drink driving, whether it's the way you're driving or the smell, other people notice. And because it is so socially unacceptable now, and it's such a great level of potential harm, we get phone calls, multiple phone calls a day, from people who work behind bars, waiting staff in pubs, you know, who've been serving you all night and then notice you get into a car afterwards. If you're a local in a pub, the bar staff will phone us if they think you drink driving. Your friends will phone us if they think you're a risk.
Even people who work in famous chains that do a drive-through experience, the drive-through staff will phone us
all the time. If you go to a drive-through and the thing they can smell is alcohol permeating from your driver's window, they will phone us, and they will have the reg because it's all on camera usually, so they can read it off, tell us the make of the car and exactly who's driving at the time. And I've had members of people's families, I've had people's wives and husbands or partners phone and say they're drink driving, can you stop them because they're going to kill themselves or somebody else. And so you will be caught. People think they won't be caught, but they will be caught. Now the way we deal with drink driving is more and more intelligence led, you know, sort of. We may not get you that night, but we'll stick your car in our MPR system and we'll stop you at the right time of night another night, and we'll have you in cuffs and we'll have that licence off you.
Rich?
Yeah, I think the strangest thing for drink drivers for me, which seems to be a theme quite often, is it always seems to be our fault, not theirs. You can arrest people for all sorts of, again, whatever criminal offence they've committed, quite often they will take responsibility for it. It's one thing that for me is done over and over again. Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me? That's them speaking to us as the police.
Absolutely. It's, I think, almost that's the like point when they realise what they're likely to lose and what aggravation they're going to get, isn't it? That's the enormity of it, the weight of that bearing down on.
But quite often there's excuses with that, and they don't see it as their own fault. But from a bizarre point of view, I did have one once who was that drunk. He thought he'd wet himself. He wasn't sure. Had to physically check with his hand. Didn't know whether he'd done it or not until he actually felt the wetness.
It's true. Paul?
The strangest one I've had is someone who was extremely intoxicated and said that they couldn't be drunk because they were a vegetarian.
Brilliant.
So that was probably my strangest one.
Dave?
I think the best one I had was at Walsall one night. Some guy was extremely intoxicated. First of all, tried to run away, and me being the lithe person I am, caught him. But he got into custody, tried to ask for a solicitor, and said, "I know my Regal Lights."
Regal Lights.
Brilliant.
At which point he bought out a packet of cigarettes. Other makes are available.
Paul?
There's quite a few over the years. I can remember one guy being extremely intoxicated, but he swore on the Bible that he'd only drunk Shandy, but when we calculated it, we reckoned he must have had 25 pints of Shandy to get that sort of read. I mean, who wants to go out and drink 25 pints of Shandy? But the best one I think I had was a guy that similar to yours, Dave, he drove off, got out of the car, ran off, and cunningly thought he would swim the canal to get away from me. Now, most people would swim across the canal, but I think in his intoxicated state, he started to swim the length of the canal. So I just walked with him until he got exhausted and then finished him out.
So one of mine, it's kind of the idiocy of it, is there's a group of friends out for the night. The driver of the car, whose birthday is absolutely obliterated on alcohol. So his mate, who's with him, does the right thing and takes his keys off him. However, he's also been drinking, but he's not at the same level, so he thinks he can safely drive the car back. Funnily enough, we stopped him after he pulled the most horrendous overtaking manoeuvre on the marked police car and then continued at speed. And he's ended up with a drink drive conviction for supposedly trying to help his mate out, who's got away with scot-free because his mate stopped him from driving.
And I think that's a really good point to close on, really. So if you want to help your mates out, if you want to help your family out, if you want to help your work colleagues out, yes, take the keys off them. If you've had a drink yourself, don't drive. The most important thing is to phone 101 and to get that information across. Again, your details will be confidential, and our enforcement teams will be out and will proactively take action against that motorist.
Thanks to everyone there from the Road Harm Reduction Team for talking about the dangers of drink driving, and we hope that some of the myths have been busted and that some of your questions have been answered during that interview there. But that is it from our pilot episode of YM. From West Midlands Police, we hope that you've enjoyed it. We hope that you want to hear more from us, but more importantly, we hope that you've learned a little bit about policing. As we said at the start of this podcast, we want to know what you want to hear about. Drop us a tweet at WM Police or find us on Facebook or Instagram by searching West Midlands Police and drop us a message there. We will take all feedback on board because we really want to give you the best insight into what we do as a force. So please, if you've got any comments, either good, bad, indifferent, whatever, we really want to hear from you. We will hopefully be producing monthly podcasts for you down the line, and we start in January 2020 with a look behind the scenes at our roads policing department, the Central Motorway Policing Group. That is to come in January. But a quick reminder that if you ever need our help, you can contact us via our live chat facility, which is available 7 days a week between 8 a.m. and midnight. If our live chat service is unavailable, please call us on 101. But remember that if a crime is happening, has just happened, or if you feel that someone's life is in immediate danger, please give us a call on 999. But remember, if it's not 999, search WMP online. All that's left to say from us here on YM from West Midlands Police is have a very safe and peaceful Christmas, and we will speak to you in the new year. Take care and goodbye.